Hello and good evening. It's almost midnight here in Boston, and I'm about to podcast for you the last installment of the Human Readables story. It's a novella written by me, Cory Doctorow, originally published in the Future Washington Anthology, and now appearing in a podcast near you. Also, as I have mentioned in the last couple podcasts, it's a finalist for the Locus Award for best novella of the year, as are two of my other stories, a novel and another story of mine. If you go to craphound.com and just scroll down the page a little, you'll see some instructions. If you like this story, and if you think it was one of the best ones of the year, you're heartily invited to go and vote for it in the Locus Awards. If you like something else better, you're heartily invited to go vote for that one. It's a great award, and it gets better when more people participate in it. I've been having a really good time here in Boston, albeit an extremely sleep-deprived and jet-lagged one. I don't normally partake in caffeine, but I think I've had about 9 cups of coffee today just to keep my eyes open. Had a really, really long trip to get to here yesterday. They canceled my flight out of Amsterdam, and then they screwed up my reservation with Virgin. I'll tell you what, I'm never flying KLM again. I've never had an airline screw me up worse than KLM, and I've been screwed up by some of the best. As I mentioned the last podcast, the next one that I'm going to do after this story wraps up with this installment, I'm going to podcast my story iRobot, which is another finalist for a couple of awards this year, and is also showing up in some of the year's best anthologies, and it's a story that I was pretty happy with how it turned out. So I'm going to start podcasting that before the week is out. I've got a couple more public appearances here in Boston. I did a ton yesterday and today at MIT, and I'm going to be doing one at Harvard and one at Olin College, and then a whole weekend's worth at the Boscone Northeastern Regional Science Fiction Convention. So I hope I'll see those of you who are local to these at one or another of them. Without further ado, here is the final piece of Human Readable. I hope you enjoy it. Good night. She hired 3 more people that week, and borrowed 4 more from fellow traveler organizations. Paying their salaries for the next 4 weeks would bottom out the group's finances, but she knew that this was now or never, and her board backed her after some nail-biting debate. Rayner showed up on the 4th day of the downtime, and she found him standing, bewildered, in the hustle of her office as her staffers penned notes on stenopads to their contacts on the Hill and handed them to waiting bicycle couriers in space program warm gear that swathed them from fingertips to eyeballs. She plucked him out of the bustle and brought him back to her office. "I've got a hell of a nerve," he said, sitting in her guest chair. "Really?" she said. "I haven't noticed." "Well, I haven't been showing it off, but I'm about to. I need advice. My office is falling apart. You've been living with no communications and no travel for a year now. You know how to make it work. We're completely lost. I've come to throw myself on your mercy." He looked up at her with his big brown eyes, and then they crumpled shut as he made his fretting face. "You're playing me, Rayner," she said, "and it won't work. Whatever I feel for you, I've got a job to do, and if this downtime tells us anything, it's that I'm doing the right thing, and you're doing the wrong thing." He hung his head. He wasn't even the slightest bit natty that day. She supposed that his personal assistant was stuck in Falls Church, or Baltimore, or somewhere, unable to get into the city. Judging from the slush and road salt on his shoes, he must have walked the 2 miles between their offices. "What's more, I don't have any advice to give you in particular. We're not faring well here because we're doing something differently. We're faring well here because we're doing what we've been at all along. Because of a network outage that you claim is impossible is a figment of our imagination. These bike messengers, we've been their best customers for months now. Everyone else is begging for service from them, but they're always here when we need them. We've got beds and changes of clothes and toilet kits in the offices downstairs. We've been living through a downtime for a couple of quarters now. We hardly notice the change. If you want to cope as well as we are, well, you can go back in time, rent out spare offices to house your staff, establish a good working relationship with a bike messenger company, learn to navigate the metro and the freeways by map, and all the other things that we've done here." He looked defeated. He began to stand, to turn, to leave. "Rayner," she said. He paused. "Close the door and sit down," she said. He did, looking at her with so much hope that it made her eyes water. "Here's my offer," she said. "You and I will lock ourselves in this office with the last draft of my bill. My staff will run interference for me with the Judiciary Committee, and we will draft a version of my bill that we can both live with. We will jointly take it to Senators Bichon and Rittenhouse, with our blessings, and ask them to expedite it through both committees. Every Congress critter on the Hill is sitting around with his thumb up his ass until the lights come back on. We can get this voted in by Tuesday. He stared at his hands. I can't do it, he said. My job is not to compromise. I just can't do it. Come on, Rayner, think outside the box for a minute here. Her heart was pounding. This could really be it. This could be the solution she'd been waiting for. Even if the bill passes, there's going to be a long deliberation over the contours of the regulation, probably at the FCC. You'll be able to work on the bureau staffers and at the expert agencies, take ex parte meetings, and lobby on behalf of your employers. It's all we've ever asked for, an expert discussion where the public interest gets a hearing alongside of private enterprise and government. But he was shaking his head, standing up to go. You're probably right, Trish, he said. I don't know. What I know is I can't do what you're asking of me. They just fire me. If the downtime continues, they won't be able to fire you. They won't even know what you're up to until it's too late. And then they'll make the best of what they can of it. No one is better qualified than to represent your side at the administrative agencies. He put his ridiculous hat on and wrapped his scarf around his neck, and they looked each other in the eyes for a long moment. She waited for the involuntary smile that looking into his eyes inevitably evoked, but it didn't come. I don't understand you, Trish. You won this incredible victory for cooperation, for collective ownership of our intellectual infrastructure. Ant networks demand the same cooperation from the nodes, that my phone pass your car's messages to his desk. Let's just set aside the professional politics for a second. Just you and me, tell me, how can you not support this? He looked at her from under his brows, staring intensely. He swallowed and said, It was the surfer, wasn't it? What? She said. The one who died. That's why you're doing this. You want to make up for him. She couldn't believe he'd said it, taken such a cheap shot. I'm surprised you didn't save that one for television, Rayner. Jesus. No, I'm doing this because it's right. In case you haven't noticed, your self-healing, uncorruptible network is down. People are suffering, the economy is tanking, the death toll is mounting. You won't even bend one inch, one tenth of an inch, because you're worried about losing your job. Trish, he said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean... Her office door opened, and there stood her embedded journalist. I just got in from Manhattan, he said. Can I set up in that corner there again? Be my guest, she said, grateful for the distraction. Rayner looked at her, forehead scrunched, and then he left. It's a good thing you're not over him, the lawyer said, pouring her another victory whiskey. The bill had passed the House with only one opposing and two abstentions, and had squeaked through the Senate by 5 seats at 5 minutes to midnight on the 8th day of the downtime. They were halfway to the bar, where the office manager had been feeding 20s to the bartender to stay open, when the grid came back up, crawl springing to life on every surface and cars suddenly zipping forward in the characteristic high-speed ballet of efficiently routed traffic. They laughed themselves stupid all the way to the bar, and after a brief but intense negotiation between the lawyer and the barman, he produced a bottle of Irish that was nearly half as good as the stuff Trish kept at home. "I'm going to pretend you didn't say that," Trish said, sipping tenderly at the booze. "Come on, girl," the lawyer said, twirling her mustache. "Be serious. You two had so much sexual energy in that room, it's a wonder you didn't make the bulbs explode. It's how you got inside each other's heads. You weren't selling the committee, you were selling him, and that's what made you so effective. We're going to need that again at the FCC, too. So no getting over him until after then." Trish drank her whiskey. She didn't know what to say to that. He'd look 10 years older tonight, in the corridors, whispering to his committee members, to his staffers, his face drooping and wilted. She supposed she didn't look any better. It had been, what, 3 days since she'd had more than an hour's sleep? I don't get it, she said. How could he be so dumb? I mean, it's obvious that the system is being gamed. Obvious that we're being targeted through it. Yet he sits there, insisting that white is black, that up is down, that the network is autonomous and immune to all corruption. It's like a religion for them, the lawyer said. It doesn't need explaining. It's just right living. It's the law. Trish thought back to the ceremony in the graveyard, the dirge and the prayers, and the God no one believed in. Had Rayner really renounced his faith when he dropped out of yeshiva? "Here's to a human-readable world," Trish said, raising her glass. Around her, the staffers and borrowed staffers and hangers-on and even the barman raised their glasses and cheered. It was warm, and this feeling swelled in her tummy and up her chest and through her face, and she burst out in what she felt like was the biggest smile of her life. She'd learned a long time ago never to send email while drunk, but it had been too much last night. What if, Rayner, what if the reason for the downtimes is that someone is manipulating the network and that's breaking it? Do you ever wonder about that? Maybe the network is as good as you say it is, until someone screws it up by trying to get preferential treatment for his pals. Wouldn't that be a kick in the teeth? We get 5 squillion% increases in across-the-board routing efficiency, but in the end, it's never enough for people who can't be happy unless they're happier than someone else. The thing that saves the human race, but if we adopt it, it will destroy us. Irony sucks. She'd signed it, love, but even drunk, she'd had the sense to take that out before sending it. Saying love would have been no more appropriate than saying, you know, I did save your cousin's life. She called in no favors, she'd run no blackmail, and she'd won anyway. He rang her doorbell at 5 a.m. She was barely able to drag herself out of bed. I figured you'd be getting up to deal with the press soon, he said, and she groaned. He was right. She'd earned some time off, but it'd be a month before she could take it. Too much press to do. She appreciated how much work it must have taken to be any of her old bosses from the copyright wars, the judge, the senator, the executive director of the PAC. She was in her robes, and he was in jeans and a UCL sweatshirt. He didn't have any gel on his hair, which was matted down by the knit cap he'd been wearing. He looked adorable. "They fired me this morning," he said. "Oh, hun," she said. "I would have quit," he said. "I'm outmatched." She felt herself blush. Or was she flushing? She was suddenly aware of his smell, the boy's smell, the smell that she could smell in his chest, in his scalp, in his tummy. Lower. She straightened up and led him to the living room and started the coffee maker going. "When do you fly back, then?" she said. He looked at her, smiling. "I don't know. I haven't bought a ticket." She felt an answering smile at the corners of her mouth and turned into the fridge to fetch out some gourmet MREs. "Bacon and eggs or pancakes," she said, then laughed. "I guess bacon is out," she said. "Oh, I'm willing to bet that bacon hasn't been anywhere near a pig," he said. "But I'll have the pancakes, if you don't mind." She set everything to perking and went into the bedroom to pull on something smart and camera-friendly, but everything was in the hamper, so she settled for jeans and a decent shirt from last year's wardrobe. When she opened the door, he was standing right there, taller than her. "I think you're right," he said, "about the network. It's the best explanation I've heard so far." She wrapped herself in silence again, waited for him to say more. "You see, the true neutral network is immune to corrupting influences and favoritism. So the existence of corruption and favoritism means that what we've got isn't a true network. Which means you're right! We need to have that hearing to get to the bottom of this so that we can build the true network." He smiled bravely. "I thought maybe you could use an expert in your corner who'd say that in a hearing?" "Thanks," she said, and slipped under his arm and back into the kitchen. Suddenly, she wanted very much to be back at her office, back with her staff, talking to reporters and overseeing a million details. "I'll think about it. I'm giving up my apartment at the end of the month, next Monday. I won't be able to afford it without the association's salary." Her place was big. A bedroom, a home office, a living room, and a dining room. It was a serious deal for D.C., even outside the Beltway. It could easily accommodate a second person, even if they weren't sleeping together. Her office, her staff, the press, the bill, her board. "Well," she said, "I've got to get going. I'll shower at the office. Got to get there in time to catch the Euro press calls. Let me put your breakfast in a bag, okay?" He looked whipsawed. Okay. "Can I give you a ride?" "No, I'll need my car this afternoon. Thanks, though." She kept her voice light, didn't meet his eyes, keep thinking. Her office, her staff, the bill. "Well," he said. He turned for the door, stopped. She tensed. He turned back to her. Trish, he said. "It's okay," she said. "It's okay. We just have religious differences, is all." She slipped past him and into her car and left him standing in her driveway. As she asked the car to plot a route for her back to the hill, she dug through her purse for a pocket knife. At the next red light, she took her lapel and slashed at it, opening a rent in her shirt, that reflected a little of what her heart was feeling. It made her feel a little better to do it. For Alice.